Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Sunday, September 4th, 2016. This is episode 1320. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Blue Apron. Blue Apron will send you fresh, high-quality ingredients to cook delicious meals with simple step-by-step instructions right to your door. See what's on the menu this week and get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/twit. That's blueapron.com/twit. And by the Ring Video Doorbell. There's a home burglary every 13 seconds, and most of them happen in broad daylight. They ring your doorbell. Make sure you're away before breaking in. With Ring, you can see and talk to anyone at your door from anywhere in the world using your smartphone. It's like caller ID for your house. Go to ring.com/tech guy and get up to $150 off a Ring of Security kit with their limited time offer. And by Epson's new EcoTank printers. With Epson's line of Super Tank all-in-one printers, you can print thousands of documents without running out of ink. EcoTank is loaded and ready to print when you are. Visit Epson.com/EcoTank to learn more. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones and smart watches, visual, virtual, headset gear, whatever is in vogue these days. That seems to be very fashion-driven in technology, doesn't it? Anything with a chip in it, whether it's in fashion or not. We even talk Windows XP a lot, more than I'd like. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's my phone number if you want to talk about tech. 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside that area, you can use Skype and call us. Just use Skype out, and it won't cost you anything because it's a toll-free number. 888-827-5536, but don't waste brain cells on that. Nope. Here's what you want to waste your brain cells on. Just take you need about 2 bytes of memory for this. TechGuyLabs.com. Just that. Because everything's there. You got the phone number there. You got a link to our fabulous chat room at irc.twit.tv. That's there. You'll also find information about previous shows, you know, things I talk about, everything I talk about, all the links, everything goes there. And today's show, as I speak, a fabulous fella named James DeRuvo is writing it down. He's going, mass insane typing going on right now as we speak. So he can put that in there. And so that way you don't have to remember anything else. You don't have to remember links or anything. And it's free. There's no sign up. You'd think the way I'm flogging it, I'd be making money off of it. But no, I don't. It's an investment mode. That's it. it's just a repository of all this stuff. In fact, your comments are always welcome too. We divide the website up into episodes of the show. This is 1,320, and then each episode has divided by hour, and then each hour is divided by call. So that way, you can really drill down. You say you hear a call, so you're driving. I know you're going out to the Dunkin' Donuts to get yourself a big gulp and a donut and maybe a cruller, a crescent bun, I don't know. And you're driving there and you hear me say something. You go, whoa. Now, don't take your hands off the wheel and start writing that stuff down, whatever you do. What you do is you just go, oh, when I get home, I can go to techguylabs.com and it'll all be there. And I just can click the link and it's perfect timing. And worse, if you're driving and you got your cruller and you got your 18-ounce Big Gulp and you're going home and you got your hands full and you're driving at the same time with your knees, and then I say something that makes you crazy because you go, no, Leo, that's wrong. And you start yelling at the radio and juggling the coffee and juggling the cruller. No, you don't need to because, A, I can't hear you anyway. We haven't figured that part of radio out yet, which is a shame. Would be nice, wouldn't it? But then you'd hear this cacophony of voices behind me at all times going, no, Leo, you're wrong. It's wrong. Ah! All you have to do is go to the website, techguylabs.com, techguylabs.com, and make a comment there. Every question has, everything that goes on in the show has a space for that. And again, no charge, no sign up. I don't want your email address. I really don't. Just, it's there. We have sponsors. They pay for everything. So it's fine. It's free. So remember that, okay? Techguylabs.com. And enjoy your, somebody's telling me 18-ounce Big Gulp. That's too small. They start at 32. Sorry. Didn't know. Yeah, Wednesday, Apple's going to announce something. I don't know. They sent out an invitation last week. It said, see you on the 7th. Okay, that's this Wednesday, right? Normally they do those on Tuesday, but of course tomorrow's Labor Day, so they can't do it on the Tuesday after Labor Day. They don't want people, you know, they got people in there. Right now, I bet you, Tim Cook's in the auditorium rehearsing. I mean, there are people that will be there for the next few days getting ready. But they don't, you know, they want to give you a little time off, the Apple employees there. So they do it on a Wednesday. And they will unveil something. The invitation, besides saying see you on the 7th, and by the way, that might be a hint. There are those who spend really way too much of their time thinking about Apple who look at that and go, ah, see, it's the iPhone 7. See you on the 7th iPhone. Well, even if they call it the iPhone 12, it's still the 7th iPhone. So I don't know if that means anything. Next year is the anniversary, the 10th anniversary iPhone. And frankly, that's the one, in my opinion, first of all, we haven't heard a word from Johnny Ive in like a year. I think he's on vacation. I think he's in the Maldives enjoying, I don't know what he's doing. He's discoing. Maybe he's driving with a cruller and a Big Gulp. I don't know what he's doing, but he's not apparently doing anything at Apple. And I think that that's probably because he's not going to worry about anything until next year when the 10th anniversary iPhone comes out. And that's the one that'll have fins or, I don't know, what are you going to do these days? A phone is a phone. They're going to do something, make it special. This one, my prediction, not so special. Not, you know, it's probably going to be so similar to the existing iPhones. And the leaked pictures we've seen, it kind of confirmed that. It's going to be so similar to the phones we already have. My guess is they're going to emphasize things like, oh, three pretty new colors. You know, that's the equivalent of fins, right? Blue. I think there's going to be a piano black, which will be just a fingerprint magnet. You know, just something, you know, they have to do that so that when, you know, you buy the new iPhone at great expense, the last thing you'd want is for people to think you have last year's iPhone. So what you do is you gently and gradually remove from your pocket this baby blue iPhone, and everybody gasps and says, is that the new iPhone? And then you get your $899 worth of satisfaction. That's what they need to do, something like that. Rumors abound, and we've seen pictures of dual camera iPhones. Now, the best guy on this stuff, Mark Gurman, he's like 12 years old. I don't know. He's really young. He started when he was a high school kid and somehow has managed to really get great sources inside Apple. This guy has moved from 9 to 5 Mac, his original blog, to Bloomberg. So now he's like a big shot Bloomberg. And he seems to still have the good resources. He says there will be two iPhones, a 7 and a 7 Plus, much like the 6S and 6S Plus or the 6 and the 6 Plus. They'll very much look the same. One of them, probably the Plus, I would guess, 5.5 inches and 5.2 inches, by the way. One of them will have a dual camera. And that, two cameras. That's twice as good, isn't it? The second, generally, the way this happens, and we've seen these before in phones, is we're really kind of, you know, this is the real problem. We're at the kind of the limits of what you can do with these things. So by putting in a second lens, it's like, you know, well, that's two lenses. That's twice as good. One of the lenses is the normal, what we call RGB lens. It's a color lens. The other one, we think, we'll find out on Wednesday, might be a black and white lens, but is used in conjunction with the color to give you more pixels and more capabilities, things like zoom. You know, now when you zoom a camera phone, it's just terrible. It's all clunky and junky because it's called digital zoom. It's not really zooming. It's just like, you know, when you zoom in on a picture on your computer and you get closer and closer, it doesn't look better and better. It looks worse and worse because you're seeing the dots. Well, that's what happens with a camera phone right now. But if they have two lenses, supposedly. You won't see that. I don't know. We'll see. And maybe there'll be other magical things they can do. Because this is true. Apple has really perfected the idea of a computational photography, the idea that the computer, the very powerful computer in the phone, is going to take the information you gather through the camera and really make it sing. And Apple's very, very good at that. Yes, they'll have a new processor, the A10, if it's next in line. That'll be a little faster. It will not, my prediction, we'll see, but it will not be, I don't think, a phone that you will feel like, if you have a relatively recent iPhone from the last couple of years, oh, I got to have that. Unless you want the fins. You want the baby blue. Well, then your friends will say, ooh, and they can marvel. But I don't think new features are going to be. It's next year for that. We will find out Wednesday. That's the big event, 10 a.m. Pacific time. All right, let's take your calls. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, your calls are next. Do not get the Note 7. That's the exploding phone. Yeah, I should have talked about that. I talked about it yesterday. I like to come up with new things every time. Say again?
The Photos program is very good.
Yeah.
It's not very good.
Yeah. I use Google Photos. That's a good one.
Ah.
And it works fine on the iPhone. This is the Note 7, but I don't plug it. Don't dare plug it in. For fear, it will burst into flame. So I've just been waiting to get a chance to swing by T-Mobile and say, here, take your phone back. Well, you know, this one actually works. You can't. Yeah, they prevent it. But the bad thing is, and I didn't do anything bad with it. I got the silver, which I really like. But it was like instantly scratched or crazed or something at the bottom there. I don't know what happened. I didn't drop it. Maybe something, I don't know. I think this is very fragile. Yeah, I don't think I'm going to get it. I think this is going to be the first iPhone since they started that I won't buy, but we'll see. My wife won't let me. She says, I have to have it. She makes me have it.
That's a good wife.
I have to have it. She says, yeah, I know. It's the exact opposite. I said, oh, honey, I don't want to get the new phone. She says, yep, nope, that's your job. You got to have to have it. Oh, but honey, it's $1,000. Nope, you got to get it. We'll be out of the country when it ships, so. I guess I'll get it when I get back. And this, I'm going to bring this back. And I think I'm not going to ask for a replacement because the replacements are 2 weeks off after I leave the country. So I think what I'm going to do is just say, give me my money back. Because I've played with this long enough. I don't need to spend any more time on it. It's a nice phone. I like it. I recommended it until it blew up. That's the Samsung Galaxy Note 7. My current favorite phone, except for the blow-up part. So.
They're
recalling. Yeah, well, it's not technically a recall. It's we'll take it back. This is an interesting thing. In order to do a real recall, they'd have to go to, and Consumer Reports has dinged Samsung on this, they have to go to the Consumer Product Safety Commission and say, we issue a formal recall, which they haven't done. And at that point, it becomes illegal to sell one in the U.S. And I think the reason Samsung hasn't done it is some retailers have said, no, we want to still sell it. 35 of them have blown up out of more than a million sold, though. Samsung probably knows what is wrong. They said they're not doing a recall in China because that's a different battery pack. So I think they're blaming the battery manufacturer, which would be typically the reason, because they put circuitry in lithium-ion batteries to keep them from overcharging. Overcharging a lithium-ion battery will cause it to burst into flames and explode. So all lithium-ion, all of them, but all of them have circuitry to prevent that. Maybe it wasn't well made. Maybe something leaked by. Maybe it was only 100 phones or 1,000 phones, but of course you don't know which ones. So you can't just say, oh, you got to just take them all back. And so Samsung's doing the right thing. They say they're going to take $1.5 billion charge for doing this. Yeah. It's not good news for Samsung. Do, 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 do. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo, the phone number. I do have the Samsung Note 7. I know I recommended that as a great phone. I still think it's a great phone. It has a little bit of a problem. It tends to blow up. So, Well, not all of them. Only 35 so far out of a million sold. But Samsung is saying, hey, we'll take them back. As soon as I heard that news, I stopped charging my Note 7, which is a shame. I really like this phone, but I will be bringing it back to T-Mobile where I got it. All the carriers, Samsung says, wherever you got it, we will take it back and replace it. The problem is there won't be a fixed replacement for a couple of weeks, we think. So either you're without a phone for 2 weeks or you buy something else. And I think a lot of people will just say, yeah, I'll take that $850 back that I spent on this exploding phone and I'll buy something else, maybe even an Apple iPhone. I don't know. I don't know. You know, I've already reviewed it. I guess I could just get my money back. And there's other new phones coming. There's always new phones coming. Google's Pixel phones, their new Google-branded phones, apparently will be out early next month. We shall see. We're taking the calls. The board is lit. And so is Kim Schaffer. No, that's wrong. And
better lit than last week.
You are well lit now.
Today I really have the George Hamilton thing.
No, you look great. You look good.
Very orange.
You look she's back in our new
on that TV
soundproof booth.
Yeah.
That we put her so that she won't, you know, we won't hear her when she's.
Because I'm very loud.
Are you loud?
Not as loud as some people around here.
You mean like my wife?
That's one of them.
Yeah. So, I won't tell her you said that. But remember,
sure
I live with her.
She's so
we
happy
all know.
She's not in the studio anymore.
Yeah. That's one of the reasons we built the new studio. We built it so that she could talk
exactly.
And not get shushed all the time.
Mm-hmm.
It's what used to be like a library. You too, right? Now you can talk too.
Yeah. That's fine.
Kim Schaffer's been lining up the calls.
I have.
And I see some people. Who should, I don't know where to start. They all look wonderful.
How about Steve in Canoga Park after a iOS update? He's having some issues.
That's okay. He's very well dressed, and that's really what we care about on this show. Thank you, Kim. Hello, Steve.
Hi, Leo. I don't know if I'm very well dressed, but I...
It's radio. Pretend.
Yes, exactly.
Why that tuxedo looks good on you. What a dashing figure.
Doesn't it? I had it custom fitted.
Yeah, I can tell. And man, have you been working out?
Oof. I have.
Looking good.
I lost 10 pounds.
Nice. You see?
You see? There you go.
And we don't know that that's not true. That could be perfectly true.
Oh, well.
As far as I'm concerned, it is.
Well, here's my issue. I just did the new iOS update to 9.3.2, I believe it is.
9.3.5 is the latest, and you want to do 9.3.5.
Oh, really? It could be 5.
Yeah, that fixes that horrific bug. Yeah, that fixes that bug that was discovered that had been around for 3 years, but the Israeli security firm that discovered it didn't tell anybody and was selling it for hundreds of thousands of dollars to nation states to spy on dissidents. That bug.
Right. Yeah, and which is, you know, I'm not a state employer.
You're not a dissident. Okay.
Secrets or anything.
Well, the problem really is that, so the NSL group was only selling it, they say, to legal governmental actors. But that doesn't mean a bad guy couldn't have simultaneously found it and gone after you for other things, right? Bugs are not good.
Correct.
So that's why it's important to patch them, especially once that patch comes out, because that's kind of like a red flag. Saying, hey,
right.
Look over here. There's a flaw.
Right, but my problem is less stately and more just general use.
Okay.
Every time I try and use Siri now to do a voice text, like say, Siri, text my son, you know, it comes back with this error message that says 662-453, sorry, could not understand your message. Please try again.
Uh-oh.
And if I do a normal text, using the keyboard, it works fine. But like when I'm in the car and I have like Bluetooth and I'm trying to text
it still does it in the car? It still does it in the car?
Yes.
Yeah, because my first guess would be you have schmutz in your microphone. That's a technical term, but schmutz in your microphone because, you know, it's just a little tiny pinhole. But it happens all the time. You get a little pocket lint in there. And Siri doesn't hear, you know, Siri texts my son. She hears... But if you're using the Bluetooth...
microphone to talk to you right now.
Precisely. Well, that's a different microphone. There's several microphones. So, but also in your car, you're not using the Apple microphone, and it's still not working. So that means something else is wrong.
It doesn't depend on whether it's in the car, even if I'm just using the phone.
Yeah.
You know, by itself. But
yeah, you sound fine right now.
The car is when it.
So Siri, yeah. Siri's a complicated lady. my wife is so cute because she loves Siri. And anytime we have a question, we couldn't figure out how to fold the back seats down in our car. So she goes, Siri, how do you fold the back seats down in the car? And Siri always says things, I don't know. Let me do a web search or let's play some Tom Jones music. It's just random. But that's right. Siri. I think probably you have a unique problem, not the normal Siri problem. The only thing I could suggest, it's kind of annoying, is to redo the phone.
Oh, yeah, that's very annoying.
Yeah. But any update always has the risk of screwing something up on the firmware, right? And not intentionally, right. But, you know, like a stray bit, you know, gets shot across the phone and suddenly it flips. And one bit flipped would be enough in the right spot would be enough to make things not work well. So this is really consistent behavior. Your voice dictation doesn't work. Can you do it in an email or anything? Can you dictate to Siri?
Yes, I can dictate to Siri. It's every time I try and do a voice text to
it's
anyone.
It's only in messages, and it's only dictating messages in messages.
Right.
How interesting. Yeah, that would sound like a messages issue more than a Siri issue, wouldn't it? Well, here's your choice. You got two choices. One, you could try just resetting the phone, back up your data onto a computer using iTunes.
Which I do.
Yeah, and then reset your phone and see it. First of all, reset it, see if it works. And then if it does, restore it. Don't restore it immediately. Then restore it from your backup. Restoring it from backup could restore the broken software. Your other choice, I think you're near an Apple store, would be to bring it to a Genius. Make an appointment before you go in. Go to the Apple website. Make an appointment at your nearest Apple store.
Yeah.
And you know, it's never a bad idea to do that. Which iPhone?
iPhone 6.
Okay. So it's out of warranty probably, or almost out of warranty.
Yeah.
It's almost 2 years old. So, but that might be something where they go, oh, yeah, we get people in here every day with this problem. Here, let me just take a toothpick or whatever. I don't know. And they might say,
a dime for a screwdriver.
You know
right?
what? Sometimes I'm not kidding. The reason I mentioned the schmutz, my son couldn't. He said, my charger keeps falling out. I said, Well, look in the charging port. Do you see pocket lint? He said, oh, yeah. I said, just clean that out. Now it works fine. So
you know, I'll try that because I keep my phone in my pocket all
look
the time.
Look carefully. So I don't know where you'll have to look where the Siri microphone is, and I wouldn't stick anything in there, though. Bring it to the Genius. Let them deal with it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. You probably say, my goodness, Steve, we don't get many people in tuxedos in here. You're so well-dressed, I'm going to give you a new phone, just because. And I'm thinking you want gold. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We're talking about computers and the internet and phones, smartphones. It's Consumer Reports is dinging Samsung right now. I was pretty impressed that Samsung leapt on this issue with the Note 7. They said that 35 phones, as of September 1st, as of 3 days ago, 35 phones had either burst into flames or, I don't know if exploded is the right word. We know that lithium-ion batteries are dangerous. They can do that if they're overcharged. All lithium-ion batteries have circuitry to prevent this, but not all are perfectly well-made. Sometimes there's flaws. Sometimes they're made by less than reliable companies. And if you overcharge it, what it'll start to do is swell. And after a while, it will heat up, get very hot, can burst into flames, and can even burst into flames and explode. And that's what happened, remember, to those hoverboards. That was a big issue with the Chinese two-wheel hoverboards that were all the rage last year. Actually, it was this year, wasn't it? And they eventually, the Consumer Product Safety Commission said, you can't sell those in the U.S. anymore. You've got to get UL Underwriter Lab approval before you can sell those because the batteries are not being protected against overcharging. Well, apparently something similar is happening to the Samsung Galaxy Note 7, which just came out. I mean, it's not even a month old. In fact, I bought it right away. Love it. Recommended it. I feel bad. I apologize. Of course, no one, you know, any smartphone could have this problem if there's a flaw, a defect. And Samsung, to their credit, in my opinion, not only acknowledged the defect, but said, we will replace any phone. What they did not do, and what Consumer Reports is mad at them about, is they didn't issue a formal recall with the CPSC. They didn't say, all right, we're going to do a formal recall. And the reason is, once you do a formal recall, it becomes illegal in the U.S. to sell the device. And apparently some retailers are still selling it. Samsung, I guess, I don't know. I don't know why Samsung didn't do that, go take the final step. So it's not an official recall. But it is my opinion, and Samsung, it's guessed Samsung will have to take a charge of $1.5 billion over this, even though the phone is brand new and they haven't sold, you know, more than a million. They've sold enough that taking them all back and replacing them or refunding the money will cost them $1.5 billion. That is a lot of money. And of course, Samsung, while it's a big company and has a lot of resources and sells many more things than phones, including washing machines and bulldozers, I mean, they're a much more than just Samsung Mobile. Nevertheless, the Note is a big part of their revenue for the mobile division. It's a big seller for them and has been since the very first Note. So they had, I'm sure, high hopes for the Note 7. This will blow away. Some people will exchange. I'll probably turn mine in for the cash and get something else, since there's always a new phone. But I still recommend the phone. It's a great phone. But don't buy it now. Wait until you have the assurance from Samsung. Oh no, we found the problem. We know what's wrong, and we fixed it. It's probable that they bought the batteries for these phones from a variety of suppliers, and some batch or some supplier didn't do it right. For instance, they say, we're not going to recall the Note phones in China because those don't have the faulty battery packs. So that would kind of confirm that opinion. So we'll see. They say they'll have new phones within a couple of weeks. It's a problem for people for whom, it's not a problem for me. I have I have binders full of phones. And there's no lack of phones. So I pulled out a phone I really like, the Axon 7. It's a ZTE phone. Really like it. And just swapped the SIM out of it, put it into the Axon, which is an unlocked phone, so I can use the T-Mobile SIM. Wiped the phone, and you should do that before you bring it in. You should do the factory reset so that none of your data remains on it. And I will bring it in to a T-Mobile and say, I'll take my money back. And you probably should do the same, or if you can, you know, if you have an extra phone lying around. I guess T-Mobile says we're gonna give you a replacement phone. I don't know what that will be. You know, something that lying around in the back. I don't know. They haven't said. But I don't know what each carrier is going to do. Check with your carrier. But I did, as a T-Mobile customer. That's where I bought my Note. That's the email I got yesterday. Was you can either bring it in, you could wait, you could forget about it, you could do anything you want. But we will take it back, and we'll even, without a restocking fee, we will refund you your money. 8888 Ask Leo, back to the phones. We go. David is in Lubbock, Texas. Hi, David.
Hi, how are you doing, Leo?
I am great. How are you?
I'm great. I'm even greater now to get to talk to you.
Well, thanks for calling. Yeah.
I've been listening to you for a long time and kind of dropped off for a while and recently started listening to you about a month ago. And you made a comment that nobody uses desktop PCs anymore as such and to a car, and you ought to get a laptop. Well, my desktop PC that I built about 7 years ago has crashed, and I don't know if it's a motherboard or memory or not the hard drives, apparently. But anyway, you did, though, answer the question of a motherboard that you recommend. I think one of the Asus boards.
That's the one we bought when we just built a PC, yeah. It's very nice, Asus Striker.
Would you recommend not building anymore?
I don't recommend building for anybody except a hobbyist who wants to do it for his own purposes. It doesn't save you money. It only lets and it can cause all sorts of problems, because if you build a PC and something doesn't work, There's no one you can call.
I had that exact problem on a previous one.
Yeah. I mean, if you buy it from Dell, you call Dell. But if you built it, you can call the motherboard manufacturer and they'll say, well, it's not our fault. You can call the RAM manufacturer. They say, well, I think it's probably the hard drive. Then you call the hard drive manufacturer and they say, we don't have any support personnel. It's an OEM product. Yeah. So basically, you're the support guy. On the other hand, I love it. It's fun. And the advantage, the sole and only advantage of building it yourself is you can get it just like you want. With exactly the components you want. You can have a cool looking case with water cooling and lights. And, you can really have fun with it. And you learn a lot in the process, including how to support.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But do you recommend just buying a desktop or a laptop instead?
No, I love desktops. And by the way, I don't want people to think I'm saying nobody buys desktops. Obviously, people do. I'm sitting in front of a desktop. I have a desktop at home. All my, my preferred computers when I'm really working are desktops because I'm sitting at a desk. But desktop sales are dying, and even laptop sales are somewhat plummeting. PCs, people aren't buying PCs partly because of people like you who just hold on to it for years. There's no reason to buy a new one. There's no compelling reason to buy a new PC anymore because even a 5-year-old PC is just as fast. So, people don't feel the compulsion to get a new one. They don't wear out, really.
So, yeah. I see that, but something's gone wrong with mine.
Well, it's time for you. And it's up to you whether you want to go through. You know exactly the hassle. And it's up to you whether you by the way, most of the time when you build your own PC, everything works fine. We built a beautiful PC as an exercise for the show, not because I would do it at home. But generally speaking, when I buy a computer, I don't buy the parts and assemble it. I have somebody do that. And it might even be cheaper because, remember, Dell and their brethren are buying parts in the thousands. You're buying onesie-twosie. There's no way you could get a price that they're going to get.
Well, but I enjoyed it. It's fun, and I enjoyed the education.
I agree.
Whose motherboard would you recommend? Because I haven't been paying attention to that.
I know. Well, I'll tell you, there's some great ones. Gigabyte is very, very good. Asus is very, very good. Those are my two favorites. Here's what I would do, though. Don't listen to me. Go to PC Perspective. It's PCPER.com on the web. And they have a hardware leaderboard where they have 4 different PCs and the recommended parts for high-end, low, medium, and so forth. It's great. So, and in fact, that's what we did. We went to PC Perspective. I looked at, and the thing is, they're reviewing all the components all along. The man who does PC Perspective, Ryan Shroud, who's their editor-in-chief, hosts a show on my podcast network called This Week in Computer Hardware. And he and Patrick Norton. And so, he's it's an outlier. It's a specialist now, right? It's an enthusiast product where he reviews motherboards. He reviews video cards. And mostly it's gamers at this point who care enough to really soup up their machines. You know where we are, and we're very much like the car buff thing, David, where most people just buy a ready-made car off the shelf. There are some people, though, who really are into cars, who want to customize, who want to mess around with it, and that's a hobby nowadays. So I think that you're in that hobby of PC building. Nothing wrong with it.
PC board years ago, PC I built between Asus as the motherboard and ATI as the video board, and they conflicted. Neither one of them wanted to take blame.
Exactly.
I took the pieces apart, put them in totally different computers, and both worked flawlessly.
There was an interaction, and there have been. We've seen that before, and many times that the firmware on the GPU doesn't work with the firmware on the motherboard.
Hey, real quick, have you heard anything about the Samsung Galaxy S7? Not wirelessly charging well in GMC pickups. I just bought a new pickup. They don't list it and it has the wireless charging built in the console. And they don't list S7, but the S5 and S6 are okay to charge on it, they say.
I think that's because it's the newest one. It makes sense. They've tested with the S5 and the S6, and that's when they put out that list.
Right.
I have an S7, never had any trouble pairing it with anything. Bluetooth is pretty standard at this point. I don't think it's really unusual that a phone won't pair with your car.
No, I'm not talking about pairing. I'm talking about recharging the battery.
Charging. No, I don't see any reason why. No, that should work. Do you have, you're doing it with the cigarette lighter?
No. A built-in.
It has a built-in USB. A wireless. Oh, I get it. All right. Well, so the Samsung S7 supports something called Qi, QI charging. There are two, unfortunately, there are two standards. There's PowerMat and there's Qi, and they're incompatible. And I know the S7 supports QI charging, Qi charging, because that's what I use it with.
Does the S5 do S6? Because they're approved. Do you know?
Yours is not charging?
No, it goes into wireless charging. Immediately when you put it on, it says wireless charging suspended or temporarily suspended or something.
Oh, that's frustrating.
It works great. Hey, it works. I bought a Samsung wireless charger, and it works great on that.
Yeah.
I can plug that
in. No, and I wirelessly, in fact, I'm doing it right now. I wirelessly charge my S7 on a third-party Qi QI charger from called the Lilt, and it works fine. I charge it every night on that.
But were the S5 and the S6s, they QI approved, or do you know?
Yeah, as far as I know.
GMC will tell you the S5 and S6 are okay to use, but not the S7.
Let me see. Maybe they did something different. Here's an article on Android Central I'm going to check here.
Okay.
Which wireless charging pad should you buy for the S7?
Well, this is the one built into the truck.
Yeah, no, I know, but I'm wondering, because they do fast charging now. Yeah, it's QI, so that's what I'm using, the Tilt. I don't know what, see, the problem is I don't know what GM is doing. Maybe it doesn't have enough, may not have enough wattage, I don't know. But for whatever reason, if your S7 doesn't like it, I guess, what can you do? It doesn't work. You could buy a third-party wireless charger that you plug into your cigarette lighter. That's probably what I would do. I don't know. I haven't heard anything about that. Hey, I got to run. Thank you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888. Ask Leo. I mean, you know who you are. If you want to build your own computer, go be my guest. You know who you are. But if you're asking me, should I, then I'd say no. If you are asking, should I build my own PC? No. You should only do it if you say, I'm going to build my own PC. And then I'll say, oh, good. Good for you. Have fun. That's great. Congratulations. Have a blast. It's kind of like people who ask me, should I buy Windows? Should I use Windows? No. If you tell me I'm going to use Windows, I'll say, great. Have fun. That's nice. But if you ask me, I'll say no. So understand that's a different, you know, if you're at all unsure. It's like, should I be an actor? No. Should I be a writer? No. Should I be a stand-up comic? Absolutely not. If you have to ask, yeah, no. You don't have what it takes. If you have to ask if you should run a Windows PC, you don't have what it takes, my friend. Get yourself an iPad and be happy. 8888 Ask Leo. Rodney on the line from Santa Monica, California. Oh, it's beautiful. I bet you're having a beautiful day in Santa Monica.
It's always beautiful here, Leo.
It is. What can I do for you, Rodney?
Leo, my Surface Pro 1, although it wasn't called a Surface Pro 1, just Surface Pro, died.
Right. It's just like World War One wasn't called World War One. It's not like they knew there was going to be another one.
Right. Yeah, right. In fact, they thought it was going to be the end.
It was
of
the Great War, the end of all wars.
Right. Yeah.
But then after World War II, they kind of knew. Okay, we're going to start numbering this.
Yeah. So, and I want to replace it with an ActivePen tablet. Now, I don't mind if it's a 2-in-1, or even possibly a regular laptop with an ActivePen. But ActivePen is critical for me.
When you say ActivePen, what do you mean? You mean pressure sensitive, that kind of thing?
No, I'm not. I don't draw. I draw a little bit, but I'm not an artist, so I don't need to be pressure sensitive. But I want the cursor to follow my pen when I'm hovering above.
You know, I would say stick with Microsoft. You like your Surface, right?
Yeah, it's great.
Surface Pro 4, the new one, is massively improved over the one you got. So if you liked your original Surface, you will love the Surface Pro 4. Same pen. I think Microsoft does pen very well. Because the Surface Pro 4 is so fast, it's such fast processors and graphics units, and it keeps up with the pen. There's no latency at all. That's the one issue, I think, with a pen, maybe this is what you mean by active, is if you're handwriting, sometimes it gets ahead of your ink, and that really is disconcerting. But the Surface Pro 4 is very snappy and responsive. And yes, you can hover and do all of that.
Right. Now, so Surface Pro 4 is definitely one that I'm considering. Wasn't there some problem with the chipset?
There was.
Chip,
yes, and that, you're paying attention. Yeah, they did.
I am paying attention.
Yeah, they did. They were using the Skylake Intels.
Right.
And the Skylake Intels did some really weird stuff. What I didn't know, and Microsoft has now made clear, is with each generation of Intel chip, you have to make some special coding in the operating system to make sure it works properly. And in this case, it was sleep that wasn't working well. And it took Microsoft 8 months. They said it was a hard computer science problem. It took them 8 months. But I have a Surface Book, which is basically the Surface Pro 4 with a hard keyboard instead of the typepad. And and it didn't work right for a long time. It works perfectly, flawlessly now with the latest Windows 10 and the updates. And most importantly, the firmware updates they've made. They finally figured out how to support the Skylake properly, which is great because now guess what? Here comes Cabby Lake, the next version. Microsoft has said, we will not – this is where I learned this lesson. We will not support the new processors on older versions of Windows. Do not expect us, for instance, to make Windows 7 work with Cabby Lake. And I thought, what? And it turns out there's a significant amount of work on their part to make the operating system work with the Intel processor, and they just don't want to do it on older versions of the operating system. I had no idea. So that was a real eye-opener for me. That, the fact that my Surface Book, which cost a heck of a lot of money, didn't work right for 8 months.
Wow.
I know. But now it's safe. It's safe to go into the water. You waited properly.
Right. Okay. So I'm considering that then, now that you tell me that Skylake problem is solved, or maybe your chat room can recommend other alternatives. I'd just like to look around at what my other options
are. I would look at the Lenovo Yogas. So you like the convertible, you like the detachable keyboard and the ability to flip it around and stuff. The Lenovos are really nice, really nice. Yeah. I think they make an excellent convertible.
Okay, so I'll take a look.
And then I guess the other maybe Acer. You know, there's new stuff coming because, of course, the Berlin trade show, IFA, just ended this week.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of PC hardware, particularly this kind of hardware, these convertibles, these two-in-ones, these pen-based, a lot of it came out at IFA, new laptops from almost all the manufacturers. So there's a new Lenovo with an OLED screen that's beautiful. That's the best screen I've ever seen. That's a Yoga. So the Yogas, they call them Yogas because they do Downward Dog. They do Warrior 2. You can bend them and fold them. And I think those are really nice. And the pen support's very good on those, too.
All right, good. And by the way, I'm speaking to you on a Note 4, which
what?
I love.
Nice.
I'm speaking. Yeah. And the version you got was the Note 7e, originally designated for export. But fortuitously, it works for 7E for exploding as well.
Really? Is that true? The designation was E?
Yeah, look it up.
How funny. The exploding Note 7. Well, I should have had to pay a premium for that. That's great. No, I'm gonna send it back. I love the Notes. I've owned every Note. Obviously, you must love your Note 4. You've kept it for a while.
Yeah, I was not going to get a Note 5 because it was you couldn't take the battery out.
I know, and there was no SD card support. They really, but they've backed down on that now. But I would, you know what? You like the Note 4, stick with it, because the removable battery is an awesome feature. I have three or four batteries for the Note 4, and I just charge them all up when I'm going to go on a long trip, and I know I won't be near power. And that way I know I can go for days. It's really a great solution. I don't know why people don't do that.
And if I need to make a note or do a sketch, it's got the active pen.
Yep. Very similar. That's Samsung kind of, I think, invented the idea that you could hover the pen and have it do things. Yeah.
Right.
So you really like pen. And it's just for handwriting, for note-taking?
Handwriting, note-taking, occasional sketching.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad to talk to you, Rodney. Enjoy a beautiful day. Put on your roller skates and your Speedo and get on out there.
All right. Will do. Thank you,
Leo. Take care. I'm the king of bad visuals today, aren't I? Somebody in the chat room said, here's a question, I was asking, if somebody says, should I run Windows 10? I say no. if they say, should I be an artist? No. Somebody said, what do you say if they say, should I listen to the Tech Guy show? No, you should definitely listen to the Tech Guy show. Yeah. No, that's a question I can happily answer yes to. Wow, we've gone through the first hour so fast. I'll tell you what, let's break for news at the top of the hour. And when I come back, more of your calls, more tech with me, Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Our show today brought to you by Blue Apron. Do you like good food? Who doesn't like good food, right? I like good food. But the problem, of course, is that if you say that and you get home and you're tired at night, you probably, good food means going out to eat. And that's not good food. I mean, it's good tasting, but it's not good for you. It's not good for your wallet. Probably not good for your belt line either. If you're spending a lot of time eating out, I want to point you to Blue Apron. Blue Apron is trying to make home cooking a habit again. And they are so great. Their mission, you can read it right off their website, is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone while supporting a more sustainable food system, setting the highest standards for ingredients, and building a community of home chefs. That means you. Now, I know why, but at least I know why I end up at the restaurant, because I'm tired. I get home. The last thing I want to do is plan a meal, go shopping, get all the ingredients, and cook it. I want to eat. I'm hungry. So I end up at the Wendy's. That's not good. See, Blue Apron Day is a great day because I get home, and right there on my step is my Blue Apron box. In it, three separate meals that I picked from the amazing weekly menu, which, by the way, never repeats. It's always new. Great stuff. They have a two-person plan, so if it's just you and your honey, it's perfect for that. By the way, great for date night. You want to impress. And family plan, which has kid-friendly ingredients and for a larger group. How about roasted chicken and teriyaki vegetables with shiitake rice? Shrimp and two cheese grits with sautéed summer vegetables. I hate doing these ads. It gets me so hungry. Pork chops and spicy chow chow with sweet potato salad, seared chicken, and caramelized vegetables. See, every ingredient you need to make this meal comes in the box. It's a refrigerated box, so it's all fresh. I mean, really fresh. And by the way, it costs less than the grocery store because they don't have, you know, a store. They don't have clerks. They just ship it to you direct from the 150 local farms, fisheries, and ranchers across the United States. Even the meat is fresh. The fish is fresh. The seafood sourced sustainably. The beef is raised humanely. The chickens are free range. The pork is raised naturally. They use regenerative farming practices. And you don't get more than you need. So if you need three shishito peppers, you get three peppers. If you need two fairy tale eggplants, you get two fairy tale eggplants. Four spears of asparagus, you get four spears of asparagus. Then you also get a recipe card that tells you everything you need to know to make the meal. And in under an hour, you use about 40 minutes. These meals are healthy. They're really good. And they even have videos on the website if you want a little extra instruction. Here's how to chop parsley. That's awesome. It's awesome. Cooking together builds strong family bonds, and research shows Blue Apron families cook nearly three times more often. See what's on the menu this week. And you know what? Your first three meals are free when you go to blueapron.com/twit. blueapron.com/twit. I love Blue Apron Day, because then I know I'm going to have a wonderful meal tonight. And you know, it's fun, because once you cook that meal, now you don't know how to do it, and it's easy. You know, you can add that to your list of things I can do really, really well. BlueApron.com/twit. Get your first three meals free. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, electrostatic discharge, anything on your mind. 8888-ASK-LEO. Yeah, sure. We'll talk about St. Elmo's fire if you want. 8888-ASK-LEO. No, it has to have a chip in it. It has to have a chip in it. I think that's the rule. I'm going to lay down the law. The website is techilabs.com. Techilabs.com. On we go with the show to Tennessee, and Raymond is on the line. Hi, Raymond.
Hey, Leo. Good to talk with you.
Well, I appreciate your hanging on so long. Thank you.
Well, I've got a kind of a weird problem with Windows 10, and I wondered if you could help.
First of all, any problem with Windows 10? Not weird. Yeah. Normal. Yeah. So what's going on?
Okay. I watch Tech TV just about 7 days a week here. I'm retired.
Thank you.
And most of 90% of the time I watch it on my Mac.
Okay.
But the other day I decided I'd watch it on the PC running Windows 10. So I opened Microsoft Edge browser.
Oh, that must have been the first time anyone opened Edge. That's nice. Congratulations.
Well, being retired and liking to fiddle with computers, I noticed that when I'm watching your show, that it'll go from like 6 or 7 seconds, then it'll pause and then go on.
Yeah, it's called buffering. It's the bane of all streaming video and audio, isn't it?
Yes, but I said, well, let me try it on my new laptop, and it does it on the laptop.
Yeah.
And so then I tried it on Chrome and Firefox, and I don't have the problem.
Oh, interesting.
And so,
well,
you know,
I got a fix for you. Don't use Edge.
Don't use Edge, right.
Actually, I like Edge. Edge, I don't understand Microsoft's thinking here. They replaced Internet Explorer with Edge. And by the way, since Edge wasn't really ready, they still ship Internet Explorer. So you get two browsers in one once you get Windows 10. And Edge is still a work in progress. I'm not really sure what Microsoft's thinking is on this. There's some nice things about Edge. It's prettier. It scrolls better. You know, it has this nice smooth scrolling. I think that's the best thing about Edge. They just now, with the anniversary update, the newest update, I presume you've already done that, they just added extensions, so you can finally use some of the extensions. I couldn't use Edge because I use a password manager called LastPass, and until I could use a password manager with my browser, there's no way I was going to use that browser. So now that they do that, I open Edge from time to time. It's nice, but it isn't full-featured, and that sounds to me like, well, you know, when you're watching our streams, I think most of the time it's still Flash, and I apologize for that. We would love to get rid of Flash. It's not really up to us. When you watch our streams, we just send our stream to a variety of providers like Ustream, and they're still kind of Flash heavy, although they're making the transition over. Bitgravity, Ustream. We do pay one company called Flowsoft to do a non-Flash stream that's for iOS, because if you're on an iPad or an Apple phone, and increasingly even on a Macintosh, you can't watch our streams. So the HLS stream might work a little bit better. I guess that's probably what's happening, is depending on the device you use and the program you're using on that device, you're getting different streams. Some of them are too heavy, and your PC can't keep up. Buffering is designed to – there's two ways that a PC could handle this problem, that I can't keep up with the stream. One would be to stutter like this, you know, and just be annoying and bad. The other would be just to pause and say, hold on a second, and fill up a buffer. Typically, these buffers are 15 or 30 seconds. And what that is it's just a bunch of – it gets ahead by a bunch of extra packets. And then when a packet – because all this video comes in a successive stream of data packets. If a packet gets lost or comes out of order, that's okay, because it then eats up some of that buffer, saying, okay, no problem, I'm going to continue to play through the buffer. That missing packet is at the end of the 15-second buffer, and we'll hope that that gets resolved by the time we get there. If it doesn't, then it says, oh, shoot, got to rebuffer. And that's what you're seeing, is rebuffering. So that means, for whatever reason, it could be that you're watching a higher def stream that has many more packets, and so your internet connection is inadequate to keep up. It could be that Edge is broken in some way, or its Flash implementation is broken in some way. And that could also be, it could be that you don't have Flash, and so you're using Flow. I mean, it's just, there's so many possible pieces to this that I don't know exactly what's going on. Does it happen with YouTube or other sites?
No, I tried YouTube and I watched a pretty long video.
Okay.
Never saw it stop.
A couple of things to try. On YouTube, you can, there's in the lower right-hand corner, there's a button you can click to step up the quality. Usually it's on automatic. Put it the highest quality, see if it happens. If it doesn't, well, the good news is YouTube's not using Flash, right? They use a different codecs and a different system. So it could be the Flash is the issue in which case you know, Chrome comes with its own flash, as does Firefox. It's a different flash than you use with Edge. So stick with maybe Chrome and just say, well, sorry, Edge. You know, I mean, it's just it, and the problem is it's specific to your locale as well as the software you're using and the hardware you're using. The fact that YouTube works fine on all those platforms probably is points the finger at Flash, the Flash protocol.
Does Windows use its own Flash?
I'm trying to remember if Edge does the same thing Chrome does. I don't remember offhand. You know, typically in the old days, remember, you'd install Flash as a plugin. And if you didn't have Flash on your PC, you couldn't playback Flash content. And you'd get a thing that said, you know, a little puzzle piece that says, I'm missing a plugin. Would you install Flash? You'd go to Adobe. You'd get Flash. The reason that people stopped doing that is Flash was such a vector for malware. Adobe had so many bugs in Flash and was having a hard time keeping it up to date that Google decided, hey, we're not going to let you do this. We're going to make sure we keep Flash up to date. So that's another thing you might do is go to the Flash download site. Just, you know, type in download Flash. It'll be Adobe. And I think it's like getflashplayer.adobe.com or something. I can't ever remember. But get the latest version of Flash and install it. That might fix the problem. I cannot remember if Microsoft with Edge bundles Flash. I think it does not. So you might want to update your Flash. Flash is going away. I mean, there's no question. I would far prefer that we not use Flash, but we don't have the bandwidth and the capability to stream to all the people who want to watch our video streams. So we use, like most people do, a third-party providers like Ustream. They do it for free, which is awesome. But we're at the mercy of Ustream and the technology they decide to use. They're a good company, though. I'm not knocking them by any means. They'll move off Flash. They're doing more and more Flash-free streams. They have to. Flash is going away, thank goodness. And you can really thank Steve Jobs for that, by the way. The late Steve Jobs, when Apple created the iPhone and the iPad, made the decision correct, as it turned out. We are not going to put Flash on these devices. And since we control these devices, we're not going to let you install Flash either. There's no Flash on this. And he wrote a long letter, which he put on the front page of Apple.com, about why there was no Flash. He said it's a problem. It's too big. It's heavy. It's out of date. It's buggy. We just don't want to support it. And we'd like to push the industry. Sometimes you have to do this. Push the industry towards a better solution. And everybody went along, and Flash is slowly being phased out everywhere. And because of the popularity of the iPhone and the iPad, if you want to have people look at your site on an iPhone or iPad, you better not use Flash. Even Adobe stopped making Flash for Android. They're slowly phasing out Flash. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Let's move on to Tom, New Hampshire. Hey, Tom.
Hey, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Okay. Just a quick comment about the iPhone 7 Plus.
Yes.
I'll take it if you don't want it.
No, I don't want to buy it. I'm not going to buy it and then not use it. I don't want to buy it. Do you want to?
You buy it and I'll use it.
Do you want it?
No, probably.
Do you have an iPhone now? What iPhone do you have now?
6S.
So you have this year's iPhone, and you're thinking there will be enough of an upgrade in the 7 that you'll get it.
No, we'll see. I haven't decided.
Yeah, we don't know until we don't have any idea. I mean, everything you hear is pure speculation.
Right, not until Wednesday. Yeah.
Right. For all we know, Apple could announce it's the iPhone Moonrock. I mean, we don't know what it's going to be. Right.
Anyway, the reason I called the other day, you had a caller wanting to have a voice messaging app.
Yeah, she used to have a Nextel phone. Remember the push to talk?
Yeah, I've heard of those. That's before my time.
No, it's not.
Well, I never had one.
Yeah, you never had one though. Yeah, unless you're 12, it's not before your time. It's
right.
But Sprint bought Nextel and put them out of business. But there were a lot of people used that, and she was using a program called Voxer, which does the same thing. Yeah. What do you like?
Right now, one of my friends and I use it called Roger.
Called what?
It's called Roger. It's on the iPhone.
Roger.
And Android.
Roger. Okay.
Yeah, and you can set up contacts, and you can And as long as they have the app, you can toss it and you send a message. They'll get a message. Hey, Tom just talked to you. You press the button, and the quality, the audio quality, they made it so clear.
Yeah.
It's amazing. I'm not sure how they did it, but it's awesome.
Well, it's not using the phone network. It's data, and it should be clear because it's recording data, right? That's the, you know, it's sad. I mean, the reason the phone sounds so bad is the decision was made at the beginning of the last century to use what they wanted is what's the lowest quality we can use and still be intelligible. And that's what we still use today, even though thanks to digital technology, we could make it sound just like I sound, high quality.
Yeah, right. Yeah, but Roger's the absolute best app.
Roger.
And it's free.
Free iPhone and Android. I will add that to the show notes. Thank you.
Yeah. And the other thing I'm going to ask you about quickly, I have the tap from the world's biggest bookstore.
Yeah.
And I don't want to say the name. I want to trigger everybody's speakers.
Well, you could say Amazon, I think.
I'm doing it to work with it.
You don't want to say Alexa. That's the one. That, yeah.
I don't want to say it.
Yeah.
So, anyway, so I have the free tune-in that came with it. How do I get my paid TuneIn Premium account to work with it? I don't want to AirPlay it. I mean, I can do that, but that defeats the purpose. I don't want to use my iPhone.
No, I understand.
I want to be able to.
So Echo supports TuneIn, but it doesn't. It doesn't
put the premium.
It doesn't do the premium. Yeah, yeah. And you've looked in the app. The Alexa app, and there's no way to log in because
Pandora in there, but you can't put your personal TuneIn account in there.
Well, that's probably something Amazon will have to do down the road. They have to make.
I didn't know there was a trick that I'm missing. Somehow.
Not that I know of.
Like,
no.
Yeah,
I have a paid. I have a paid premium TuneIn account too. I love it.
Yeah, it's made for football.
You know,
that's starting at the end of the week.
Oh, that's right. You can listen to football, can't you? Yeah.
Yeah, that's the reason I wanted to get it over there.
Sure, that makes sense. Going forward, this may all change because, you know, when Amazon created the Echo, I think that they didn't understand what they had a tiger by the tail. They just created something, and it was somebody's idea, and Jeff Bezos, the CEO of Amazon, said, all right, yeah, sure, go ahead, do that. I don't care. And it took off like crazy.
Yes.
They've sold more than 1 million units, but more importantly, the people who have them are really the best ambassadors. We all go around saying, have you tried the Echo? Oh, my gosh, it's amazing. We love it for some reason.
Yes, I do, too. It's my bedroom speaker.
So, yeah, me too, actually. So it is. So it's mine, too. I have the Dot, not the Tap. So the Dot... and I pair it by Bluetooth to a very nice speaker system.
Right.
But the good news is next year, Sonos, and I'm also a big Sonos fan. Sonos is kind of like the Echo in the sense that people who buy it are great ambassadors for it.
Right.
But it's very expensive. It's the idea is wireless speakers that sync all over your house. And I'm all in on Sonos. I have Sonos in almost every room. I love it. And they've announced that they're going to work with the Echo as well starting early next year.
I hear that. Yeah, I heard you.
That will probably begin because you can do a premium tune-in account on Sonos. So Sonos right now, and the question, and nobody seems to be able to answer this, including nobody's at Samsung, Sonos or Amazon has said anything. Maybe I'll just call them Samazon. They haven't said anything. But the question is, because Sonos has all these premium accounts you can log into, Spotify and Apple Music and Tidal and Deezer and TuneIn, will those also work with the Echo?
Right.
That would then do what you want to do. You'd have to have a Sonos speaker, but you're using the Dot. You probably don't use the Dot speaker. I mean, you use the Tap,
no,
right?
No, I only have the Tap.
Yeah, you don't use the Tap speaker, do you? You use a better speaker, right?
No, the Tap is...
It's good enough? All right. Button. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think the Echo speakers are not the best speakers. They're mono. Having really good speakers that work that way would be, to me, the holy grail. I'd love to be able to talk to my stereo system and say, I want to hear the Niners game. That would be awesome. So it remains to be seen. They're not clear on this, but I would love it, and I'm hoping this will be the case, that when this relationship is consummated early next year, you'll be able to use all the signed in accounts that you have on your Sonos with the Echo. That would solve your problem. And I wouldn't be surprised if Amazon's trying, you know, they have to make a deal, right? They have to go to TuneIn and say, you know, we have to be able to interface the Echo app with TuneIn. People have to be able to log in there, validate it. That's got to be with the cooperation of TuneIn.
Yeah, Well, they're halfway there because you can already
register
an account.
They just did Spotify.
Yeah.
Right? So it's,
they don't have that.
Yeah, it sounds to me like they're doing
music. I did for TuneIn. I'm not paying for anything else right now.
No, I know. But, I mean, it sounds like they're making progress in that direction.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, and, you know, there's a long way they could go with this Echo thing. I mean,
oh, absolutely.
The day they get Scarlett Johansson's voice in there is the day I stop leaving the house. I'm just going to stick around and talk to Echo all day. So I feel like it's a great product, and it's just beginning. It's in its infancy, right?
It is.
All right. Hey, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Nice to talk to you. Thanks for the recommendation, too. Rod is in New Jersey. He's next. Hi, Rod. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Nice to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you. What's up?
I have I'm a little embarrassed about asking you about this, but I've never backed up my computer.
You shouldn't be embarrassed. You are probably in the majority. I think it's close to half of all people. I saw the stat a few weeks ago, and I can't remember, but it's like almost half of all computer users have never backed up.
Yeah, I've been using my computer more than 20 years, and
You've been very lucky. You know, the people who back up are the people who've lost data, frankly. That's who's the most serious about backup is when you lose something.
Is it easy to do?
Yeah. So you know what? Let's hang on, because I wouldn't mind doing like just the basics of what you need to do to backup. And it's not going to be an ad for Carbonite or sponsor. It's just going to be a general discussion of backup, how to do it the best way. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy here. Chris Marquardt, the photo guy there. Chris joins us every week to talk about digital photography, taking better pictures with your digital camera or your smartphone. He's a pro photographer himself. You find him on the web at discoverthetopfloor.com. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I am doing great. Welcome. We continue on. You want to continue on with your topic of the last couple of weeks?
Yes, we're still right in the middle of that streak of secret superpowers. Secret superpowers for photographers. You know, it's where you see a photo and you go, wow, how did they do it? Can I do this? I probably can't, but yes, you can. There are just a few tips around certain kinds of photography, and this time I want to talk about how to shoot pictures of the sun.
All I ever get is a bright dot. Yeah,
exactly. So there are a few tips and tricks, and let's start with the first one, which is the sunset. Sunsets are, we love sunsets, especially if they're well photographed. And sometimes a sunset can be a bit disappointing when we take a photo of it because our memories are slightly different. And the reason for that, by the way, is that when you're there taking the picture, you also have all those other sensory inputs that you don't have anymore when you just look at the photo. So you will have the breeze, the smells, the warm weather, and maybe you have a nice drink in your hand. And later when you just watch the picture, you have this two-dimensional picture, and that's pretty much everything. So that's a kind of you have to kind of recreate some of that mood and some of that emotion in the picture. And here are a few tips to do that. First of all, the sunset. If you are out, let's say at a beach or somewhere, and you want the sun in the picture of the sunset, first of all, don't worry too much. Have the camera on, let's say, aperture priority, some automatic mode, and shoot, because the camera will actually do quite well in that respect. I tried this when I was in Norway, and we had the midnight sun, and I just gave it a shot, and it literally just came out brilliant. So that's the first thing. Do not worry too much about it. A few things I would worry about are on the composition side. I mean, just pointing the camera at the sun, nice. But, you know, it's not that interesting. But you might have a nice foreground, for example. Something in the foreground that is interesting. So include something. Horizons during sunsets. Another thing, where do you put the horizon? It's kind of, the cameras, if you look through the viewfinder of a camera, you have all these little dots on there and all these guides and things. And that kind of suggests to put things in the middle, but with a horizon, that doesn't always look nice. It's kind of boring if the horizon is right in the middle. So I will typically make a decision if I move the horizon up or down in a picture. based on what's interesting in the picture. If I have a beautiful sky, let's say a sunset that has beautiful clouds, something really interesting going on up there, I will move the horizon down towards the lower third of the picture, maybe even further down, and include a lot of that sky. Or if the sky is kind of boring, well, then I might include a bit more of the foreground. One thing that really works well with sunsets are reflections. If you have something in the foreground, like a puddle, or if you're on a beach, at a rocky kind of beach, you might have some tide pools. Get really low, get really, really low, and shoot them so that you have parts of the sky reflecting in those tide pools. That will that will add a lot of interest in the foreground of the picture. And if you want the sun big in the picture, if you want it like a prominently big sun that you sometimes see in photos, you will need a very strong telephoto lens for that. Get your strongest, your longest lens with, let's say, 500 millimeters or up, and you will have a big sun in the picture. And it'll be more interesting. Colors. Another thing about shooting the sun. If you want to shoot a sunset, you want the photo to be warm. You want the photo to, you want to emphasize the warmth that you felt when you were there. Because sometimes the camera can take that out with its automatic white balance. And photographers used to use filters for that. So back in the days of film, photographers put some filter in front of the lens to warm it up. With digital photography, you don't really have to do this because you have what's called a white balance setting. And if you set the white balance to the shade setting, that's something that's one that works really well. Which is normally made to kind of warm things up slightly when you're shooting in the shade. When you're shooting at a beach, the sun is just about to set and you have it on shade setting, which doesn't really fit. I mean, the shade is, you're not in the shade there, but it will warm the picture up even more and it will give that sunset picture this really warm glow. Another tip is stay around after the sun has set.
Don't just leave the beach. Say, all right, I'm done.
No, it's really, sun is gone. You leave. No, don't do that because you know what happens? The sun goes below the horizon. And then about 20 minutes after the sun has set, there's usually some glow coming from behind the horizon that lights up the sky beautifully because the sun will go. If you try to imagine the Earth's atmosphere, and one of the reasons the sunsets are so nice and warm is because the sun has to go through a lot of atmosphere, and if it kind of dips behind the horizon, goes through even more atmosphere and then lights the sky above, and that is interesting. Especially if you have clouds on the sky that then are lit from underneath as opposed to from above. So you sometimes get these red, dark red clouds that are just amazing to look at. One more thing you can do when you have the sun in the picture, and it's not just the it's not a sunset, but the sun might be higher in the sky, or actually any point light source. If you want some sunbeams, you know, like children, how they paint a sun with the sunbeams coming out all the sides. You can actually get this in photography as well if you use a small aperture. If you set your camera to aperture priority and you turn that to a high number, which means a small aperture, a small little hole that the light has to go through. And that ends up creating these beams all around the sun. It is kind of, it depends on the lens you use. Some cameras make nicer sunbeams. Some make it a bit, well, look funny, but you have to try it out with different lenses that you have and different kinds of cameras and see how it turns out. But it usually comes out really nice.
I got one more tip for you. And I learned this from my wife, who's so much of a better photographer than I am. And she's learned so fast. Turn your back on the sun and take a picture sometimes the other way. She got the best picture of her son and his best friend there. We were sitting on rocks watching the sunset. I'm shooting the sunset like crazy. She turned around and that beautiful glow, that pink golden glow of the sun setting, looked so good on the rocks and the kids. It's a gorgeous picture. And you know it's at sunset, but you don't see the sunset. You're looking at what the sunset's reflected off of. And it's beautiful.
Oh, and by the way, use the tools at your disposal. If you have a smartwatch like an Apple Watch or something, there's a complication on that that shows you when the sunset's gonna be.
Oh yeah,
There's an app called the Sol app, S-O-L. Oh yeah, that's a beauty. Look at the warmth.
We printed it and framed it because we liked it so much.
Amazing.
The photographers call it the magic hour for a reason, right? Everybody looks golden and glowing, and the rocks themselves just kind of took on this warm glow. So
yes.
Yeah, it makes me mad because I've been a camera buff for a long time, and she's completely eclipsed me.
You know, sometimes it's just about being at the right place at the right time.
She has a great eye. Chris Marquardt, he's at Discover the Top Floor. That's his website. Don't forget, our assignment is fly. We'll be reviewing that on September 18th when he comes back from Greenland. Chris, have a wonderful week. We'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Our show today brought to you by this doorbell. Oh, I love this doorbell. It's the Ring Video Doorbell. I know you've heard me talk about this before. We have one in our house. We have one. I'm going to put one on our bedroom door, I think. I want to put them everywhere. I love the Ring. The idea is this doorbell. So we on our front door, we replaced a wired doorbell. So that was an easy thing to do. The Ring Video Doorbell can go, this one, this is the original, can go where there's a wire. Or where there's no power, because it has a big lithium-ion battery in it. It then pairs to your Wi-Fi. So when somebody rings your door, it rings it on the Wi-Fi. So your phone, your tablet, anything with the Ring software on it, your Mac, your PC, they'll ring too. And then there's this high-def camera. It's wide, very wide angle. And there's a microphone and speaker in here too. So you can launch the software and answer the door. Say, hey, what's up? Oh, just leave that package on the step. Or who are you? What? Scare away bad guys. It also has motion sensor in it. So that's nice because that means even if somebody doesn't ring the doorbell, you can see people walking up your front step. And the motion sensor is completely configurable. The notifications are completely configurable. They even, if you want to pay for it, it's very reasonable. I think it's something like $30 a year. They have off-site recording so you can go back and look at previous things. Now, this is the doorbell kit comes with everything you need. The handle, the drill bit, special screwdriver bits, Phillips, and then Torx. And then it's got a level even and a USB cable for charging. I mean, this is a really complete kit. Now, that's the original Ring Video Doorbell. If you go to ring.com/tech guy right now, you could see they have a bunch of other kits. ring.com/tech guy. Let me type that in. They're calling it now their Ring of Security Bundles. So there's the Ring, the original Ring. There's this new Pro. It doesn't have a battery in it, so it's for wired doorbells only. But it's a little slimmer as a result, and there's more room for a camera. So it has a 1080p camera instead of 720p. They also have lighted security signs. That's actually really, by itself, valuable because bad guys see that. They go, I'm not walking up that driveway. And they now sell the Ring Stick-Up Cam, which is a camera. It's actually a Ring Video Doorbell without the doorbell. It also pairs to your Wi-Fi. No wires. And you do exactly the same thing. It's got a speaker and a microphone. It'll alert you when there's motion in your backyard or your side yard or wherever you put this. They also sell, which is really cool, a solar charger that connects to the stick-up cam so that you don't even have to power it. It just gets solar power. And they make a chime, too, which is nice if you have parts of the house, you know, the workshop or the garage or the attic where you don't hear the doorbell. You just plug this into the wall, pair it to your Wi-Fi. It'll ring there too. So you get a great bunch of stuff. Pick the kit you want up to $150 off if you go to ring.com/tech guy. I love the Ring Video Doorbell. I'm really glad we got it. It's so useful. I could tell what people are coming or going at the house of my daughter was living with us. It was great to be able to know if she was home or not and when she got home. If you've got teenagers, you're going to really appreciate that information. Honey, I have video. Is there anything you'd like to tell me? It's really cool. The Ring Video Doorbell. Go to ring.com/tech guy. There's somebody leaving our house right there. ring.com/tech guy. It's awesome. This is a carry-all or something that company called This Is Ground just sent me. And, boy, it's beautiful. He says it's inspired by those organizers, which I had many of. In fact, I had one that looked just like this. It was a Franklin planner, and it zipped up just like that. But this is for the modern age. Beautiful, beautiful stuff. I don't know what these snaps are for. Is this supposed to... Maybe that's a... maybe you do this, and then you... I don't know. It's got weird... It's got things I don't... Mystery. Mystery slots and pockets. I need instructions. So let me... This is the website. Maybe they'll explain. This is Ground. Wait a minute. I'm going to go back to the front page. This is... Oh, no. That's their Instagram. I will follow them, though. I don't want their Instagram. I want their... Maybe this has instructions. What is this? Is this the mod? No. The riff? it's got one. I don't know what it is. This is Ground. Huh. It's really nice leather. Nathan Staten, our musical director. I think he's in a country mood. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo. Nathan, did you ever work as a DJ or, this must be your... Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah, in Louisville. Oh, well, no wonder. You played a lot of this kind of music. Love Louisville. It's in you. The music's in you. You'd rather be hunting and fishing. Yes, man. Bob in San Jose's next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Bob.
Hey, how you doing, Leo?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I am doing just lovely today, so I can't complain.
Yay! This is a nice time of year.
Yes, it is. It is very pleasant.
Yes. So. Not too hot, not too cold. Labor Day, weekend, you get a little time off. Barbecue time. It's a nice time of year. I think my favorite time of year is the fall.
Yeah, mine too.
Yep.
So here's what I've got. I've got an old S2 from Samsung.
Yeah.
And it's beginning to fail. So I'm looking at getting an iPhone because I've never been in the Apple world, and I thought I might try it out. So instead of buying one of the current ones, I was looking for an older one, maybe a 4 or 5 or something.
I wouldn't necessarily.
The 4s are kind of too old.
I wouldn't go that far back. I'll tell you what, Apple kind of has you covered with their current bestseller, which is the iPhone SE. So
SE. See, that was kind of my question, is that there's so many different S's or 5s.
Well, the way it works is, at least in the last few years, the first iPhone, and then there was the iPhone 3G, which was, believe it or not, the first iPhone didn't even support a 3G data network, only 2G. So then they did the iPhone 3G the following year, then the 3GS. And S kind of always means... like the next one of the same thing. We don't change the body, but we add features. And then the iPhone 4, the 4S, the 5, the 5S, the 6, the 6S. So that's only within the last, few generations. The SE is an unusual one Apple released last year. It's essentially an iPhone 5, but with updated guts. So it has the most recent processor. And I tell you why you want that. It's more like it's going to have a longer lifespan with the Apple operating system. So as they update iOS, each time they update, they cut off older versions. But the SE is in effect a new version. So that one you're going to have a full 4 or 5 years of operating system. And so it sounds like you keep your phone for a long time.
Well, yeah, I mean, it works, so it's just that now it's...
What's wrong with you? Don't you know the economy of this nation cannot survive unless you buy a new phone every 2 years? It's necessary.
But I buy a new computer every year.
Oh, okay, then you're fine. You're making your contribution to Silicon Valley grandiosity, so it's okay.
Yeah, I'm doing it on the other way. I buy lots of computers, but phones.
Somebody's got to pay for our trips to Burning Man. It's just not... that stuff's expensive.
Yeah, it certainly is. Okay, so the 5 SE would probably be the best.
It's not called the 5, oddly enough. It's just called the SE, but it is just between you and me, it's a 5. It's also a slightly bigger screen. It's not the biggest, but it's a little bigger than the 4. The 4 now is really feeling kind of puny, to be honest, as phones get bigger. But the 5 is not as big as the 6 or the 6S, so or the 6 Plus, for that matter. So I think you'll like it. I think that's the one I'd get. It'd give you the most lifespan. It's not the cheapest. You can probably find a cheaper one, you know, used or, you know, lying in the back of some shop somewhere. But I don't know if that's a good idea. I would get the SE. They say you save $100 because it's an SE, and that's really been a bestseller. It's really done well for Apple.
Yeah, and if I really do like it, and after some period of time, maybe not as 5 or 6 years, but I might want to upgrade to the newest current one that's coming out. But I don't want to spend that kind of money and find out I don't like the Apple operating system.
Well, and increasingly, there's a good real question whether people should be spending $800 to $1,000 on a smartphone. That's a lot of money. That's more than your PC.
Yeah, it is.
And so that we're seeing very good quality phones in the $300 to $400 range. There's really not much to argue for buying a more expensive phone, to be honest. I think Apple is just making, we know, they're making insane profits on this stuff. And so is Samsung, for that matter. So, get the SE. Okay. I think that's a perfect compromise for somebody who wants to dip his toe in the Apple water.
Yeah. Can I sneak in another quick question or not?
Certainly.
Very short one, though. We use, my partner uses his phone, and it's an LG new one or something, mm-hmm. right, to do Facebook video, the live video thing with Facebook.
Yeah.
But one of the things I've seen is that watching it live, right, we can't hear, is on this couch, he's got phone in front of him. And, if he turns his head just a little bit, we can't hear him or the volume is so soft.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering if we got a microphone and attached to it. I mean, do we just use one of those earbud type things?
No. Well, that would work, by the way. You have that. You could try that. That just takes the microphone out. You could hold it closer to you. But there are also microphones designed for the Lightning port. There are you said he's an LG, so there are microphones designed external microphones designed for the microphone port, which is the same as the headphone port. There are even cameras designed for Facebook Live. If you get serious about Facebook Live and you really, I'm like, maybe this is part of your business or you want to do more of this, I would get a camera that's designed for Facebook Live. The one I'd recommend is called the Mevo, M-E-V-O. And it has a very different microphone arrangement. It's got what's called an array mic, which is designed to work in exactly that situation, when you turn your head or you're distant from the camera. This is a really interesting camera. It streams directly to Facebook. It also streams to its owner's company, which is Livestream. So there's two different live streaming sites. It's got a better microphone, but a better camera, too. It's a 4K camera. And the way this works, which is quite interesting, you can actually... It can follow you. It only shows 1080p. It shows one quarter of the total view of the camera. But you can use your phone to switch it. Now, unfortunately, it's iOS only, so you'll use your new iPhone to do this. But you can use your phone to say, I want this portion of the picture or that portion. Or you can turn on automatic, and it'll follow a human around. It'll follow your face. It's a really interesting product. It's called the Mevo. You can find out more at getmevo.com. If you get serious about Facebook Live, if it's more than just, I'm playing with this, that's a good way to go.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
But you can get external mics. You can get lavalier mic, TV-style lavalier lapel mics that connect to your LG phone. And
got some of those. We've got a couple of lavalier.
Yeah, the thing is the interface has to go into that mini jack on the phone.
Oh, okay.
But you know what? You're doing TV or broadcast of some kind.
We do it to talk to our membership. Perfect. The people that are in our little group.
So this is part of your business. Get the Mevo. You will really appreciate it.
But we have to have an iPhone to do that, right?
But you have one, or you're going to get one, or an iPad would work.
Yeah, we're going to have one. It's just that you can't just use it by setting it on the table and turning it on.
Yeah, you can. You actually could. But you can, if you want to switch and move it around, move the picture around and control it, you do that with iOS. I wonder if they're going to eventually do an Android version. I don't know. We'd have to ask them. But I've been using this, and it's pretty impressive. If you search on Facebook for Mevo or even just Google search, Mevo Facebook Live, you'll find people using it, and you'll get a sense of what it can do.
Okay, cool. I'll do that.
Yeah, if you're doing it for business, this would be a better way. You know, with a phone, somebody's got to hold the phone, or you put it on a tripod, you have an external. By this time, and by the way, Mevo does support external mics as well. So if you have lapel mics, you could use it with it. It's a really interesting idea, actually, that maybe broadcasting is going from the big studio with the $20,000 cameras and the director and the technical director and the lighting and all that to just some guy in his hot tub and a Mevo. And you can do it all. You can even control it yourself while you're on camera. It's kind of an intriguing idea. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, electrostatic discharge, anything with a chip in it or not. 8888-ASK-LEO is the phone number. 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside that area, you can call via Skype, and we'll still take the call. It won't cost you anything. By the way, the show ends in an hour. Yeah, I know. I'm sorry. But I'm going to keep going. Yes, we're going to go dark. Somebody else could take over the airwaves, but I will keep answering calls because we're recording ahead for a future episode. So, if you sometimes it's hard to get in during the regular show, this would be a good time to call. About an hour from now, we're going to keep taking the calls. 8888-ASK-LEO. I apologize. I had promised a half hour ago to explain backup. I will do it succinctly so that you can understand it. We had a caller, remember, who said, I haven't ever backed up, ever. I've survived 12 years without a problem. And, you know, the truth is most of the time you won't use your backup. You won't need it. Most of the time you don't. That's fine. This is disaster planning, right? The problem is when you do need the backup, you need it bad. You need it somewhat desperately. Maybe you accidentally fat-fingered a file and threw it away. That happens, you know, a lot. Maybe you lost your laptop. We had a listener in studio a couple of years ago said, yeah, I was sailing to Catalina Island and my laptop was on the deck. We hit a wave and it, boom, it went over the railing. It went bye-bye. Now, it's tragic enough when you lose your hardware. That's, you know, that's bad. You got to buy a new laptop. But it really could be worse if you lose your data on it. The thing, your data is, and I'll define it now, is the stuff that you created that is your stuff that is, there's no copy of anywhere else. It's not because you installed it from a disk. You know, you can get that again, right? If you lose Microsoft Office, you can get another copy and reinstall it. You lose your operating system, you can reinstall it. The data is the stuff that you made that you only have one copy of. That's kind of, sometimes it can be things you're not even thinking of. Somebody called the show and said, I lost my hard drive, but I didn't lose anything important except my bookmarks. I thought, well, actually, that's pretty important, isn't it? If you spent years putting together internet bookmarks, you may not want to lose those. If you've been playing Call of Duty and saving your games regularly, and suddenly your hard drive fails and you lose all your saved games, you're back to the ground zero. That could be a big deal. More often than not, though, it's really important stuff. Photos, wedding pictures, baby pictures, or financial records, tax records, sometimes email. It's the nice thing about backup is as we move more and more data to the cloud, we are in effect backed up. So, for instance, your email, it probably lives not only on your computer, but on your email provider's computer. If you use Google Mail or Yahoo Mail, they have a copy too. Although plenty of people for years used Yahoo or AOL Mail, and then AOL deleted all their backup records, and people went, where'd my email go? So if it's important and it's yours, you probably should back it up. Backing it up just means making a second copy. And by the way, it's not a backup if there's only one copy. So sometimes people say, oh, I'm going to take my data, put it on a backup drive, and then delete it on the original because now I have a backup. No, you don't. You have one copy. That is not a backup. You don't. The point is to eliminate a single point of failure. You want to make sure that your data is in several places so that even a catastrophe, a fire or a flood, will not lose that data. So, you know, if you don't have anything important, if nothing you do with your computer is important, you don't need to back it up. But I bet you there's something that you do care about. And so I refer to my friend Peter Kroger. Peter is a Kroger, rather. He is a professional photographer, great guy. He wrote a book for photographers called The DAM Book, Digital Asset Management. And, of course, photographers think a lot about this kind of stuff. Librarians do, too. The idea being you take pictures. Let's say you take a wedding. You shoot a wedding. Now, the bride is not going to restage the wedding so that you can get more pictures should you lose them. So as a photographer, your workflow involves getting the pictures safely off your camera onto the computer so you can process them, work them, deliver them to your client, but also so that you can put them safely somewhere so that if something should happen, you don't want to go tell a bride, oh, we lost your wedding pictures. That is not a good day for you or her. So photographers pay a lot of attention to this. In the Digital Asset Management book, Peter talks about something he coined the term 3-2-1 backup. You can even read more about this. He's made a great site on photographic workflow in conjunction with the Association of Professional Photographers and the Library of Congress. It's a site that probably a lot of photographers should read for a lot of reasons, not just backup. I think it's called dpbestflow.org, DP for digital photography, bestflow.org. And there's a lot of information about photographic workflow and processing. But if you look, you'll see, of course, there's a whole chapter on backup. And if you really want to know about backup, pay attention to the guys who can't and gals who can't afford to lose data, photographers. He talks about 3-2-1 backup. And if there's one thing that you take away from this, that would be it. It's the easiest thing to remember. 3-2-1. And here's what that stands for. 3 copies of your data. Not one, not two, but 3 copies of your data. And the 2 is on 2 different kinds of medium. So you don't want to have them both copies be on a hard drive sitting next to your computer. Maybe one on a CDs, one on hard drives, or one on USB or one on hard drives. Or better yet, one in the cloud and one on hard drives. And that's the one is off-site. Not next to your computer. I like to have 3 copies of everything. One original, one on a local hard drive that I can get access to easily, and then one in the cloud in case of disaster. You know, if I lose both backups, and a fire would destroy both local backups, I could still go to the cloud and get it. So that's the 3-2-1. 3 copies, 2 different forms of media, one of them off-site. It isn't that complicated. Most operating systems come with some form of backup. Apple has Time Machine. Windows has its own backup utility. It's fine to use that, but that's just one extra copy. You want another one, right? And then I would look at a way to... Now, some people, I know people, my friend Steve Gibson, I don't know if he still does this, his 3-2-1 backup is, of course, a local hard drive, and then he would burn CDs, this is some years ago, and mail them to his mother. And it would say, Mom, you don't even know what this is. You don't have to worry about it. Just put it somewhere in your closet. If I need them, I'll let you know. That's off-site, right? It's safe there. It's highly unlikely that both he and his mother would suffer catastrophic data loss at the same time. That's what you're looking for. I know some people, I used to do this. I'd make 2 backups. I'd make one, both of them local, and bring one to work. And then every week, I'd bring the one at work home and bring the one at home to work. And I'd back up regularly. That's pretty good, but it has a flaw, which is there is a period of time that week of data that you could lose if you know, you lost everything locally. The work backup is a week out of date, as much as a week out of date. So, but you get the idea. The idea is let's get some of this off-site. I do that with my photographs. I actually make copies everywhere. Now, thanks to cloud backup and cloud storage, I have my photographs on Google. I have them on iCloud, Apple's backup. I have them on Flickr. I'm not going to lose any pictures. And that's another thing. You know, cloud storage is great, but maybe 2 different providers. Because what if Google went out of business or Apple went out of business? Having it on 2 different providers might even be better. And nowadays, there's so many companies that will do this for you. It's not a bad idea to have a variety of choices. So that's the basics of backup. Make 3 copies, not 2. You might think 2. It's not 3 copies if you delete the original. So keep an eye on that. You want to check your backups regularly. Make sure that they haven't degraded or failed. You know, CDs fail. Hard drives fail. So just don't just put it in the closet and say, I got a backup. You want to refresh it regularly, update it regularly, and check it regularly. That's the 1-2-3 of 3-2-1 backup. And again, if you're a photographer, you want to read more about this, lots of detail at Peter Krogh's great website, dpbestflow.org. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls right after this. Yeah, and actually, the best backup for photographs and for written stuff is paper. Print it. What's, you know, the oldest documents we have are on papyrus, right? It's not paper because paper doesn't last, but papyrus lasts a long time. We have written material from the Egyptians from thousands of years ago. If you put it on a hard drive in 3,000 years, will anybody be able to read a hard drive? I don't think so. Our show today brought to you by those great Epson EcoTank printers. We're all in the LaPorte House on Epson. Lisa bought a 4550. She just had to one-up me, you know? And now she's got one at work, too. She loves the 4550. And of course, it was my job as the tech guy to install them both, and I can tell you it's a great experience. The Epson EcoTank printers don't come with cartridges. They come with ink, bottles of ink in the box, and enough ink for a lot of pages. In the case of the 4550, the one we bought, 11,000 black pages or 8,500 color pages, about 50 ink cartridges worth. That's about 2 years of ink in normal use. For us, it's even longer. So when I come when I come to buy new ink in 2018, probably 2020, you get them in these bottles. And they're a lot, about 80% less expensive than a cartridge. So the savings is huge. Now, the reason I mention that is you go and you buy this, it's not going to be as inexpensive as a cartridge-based Epson printer. It's going to be just as good in terms of the Precision Core engine, the 40 million drops of ink, the crisp black and white printing, the vivid colors, the auto two-sided, the efficiency of an inkjet printer. And by the way, this all-in-one does everything. Scan, color, copy. You can even use it as a fax machine, although I found very little occasion to do that. But you can if you have to. If I ever needed a fax, I'm ready. Just have to find a phone line. That's more of a challenge for me these days. This printer is awesome. And I tell you, it's just a fabulous solution. They have now all kinds of EcoTank printers for every use, home and office. They even have the big guy. Look at this. This is for high volume, 20,000 black, 20,000 color pages in the box. Now, as I started to say, the reason they want you to know this is it's a little more expensive, right? Because you're not going to be buying a cartridge in a month. You're not going to be buying any ink. You're not going to be going back to that store for 2 years. So you pay a little bit more. But when you figure it out, it's a lot less. And it's a great deal. And it's great printing and very fast. And it's going to save you over the life of the printer a lot. It's a CES 2016 Innovation Awards honoree. Rightly so. Because Epson really, I think they're taking a little bit of a chance, right? No one else is doing this. You ought to take advantage of it. Also won the printer, Small Business Windows Printer of the Year. EPSON.com/EcoTank. Epson, exceed your vision. Leo LaPorte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. And some very patient people on the line. Let's start with Stephanie. She's been waiting the longest in Corona, California. Hi, Stephanie.
Hi.
Thanks for being patient.
Oh, thank you for taking my call.
What can I do for you?
I was wondering if you could tell me or give me information on someone that can help me to build an app.
Yeah, a lot of people. You know, my son does this to me every few months. He goes, Dad, I got a great idea for an app. Everybody looks at what's going on with apps and saying, wow, Instagram, they got $1 billion for an app. Wow, WhatsApp, they got $24 billion for an app. I'm going to cash me in on some of this. Or maybe you just have an itch that you want to scratch. You know, my son says, because he's a college student, he says, you know what we need? We really need an app that will help us find subletters when we go away for a semester abroad or whatever. I want to do a subletting. I shouldn't say this out loud because now somebody's going to steal this app idea. Well, here's the problem. App ideas are a dime a dozen. There's no inherent value. Everybody's got an app idea. The trick is getting it made. So you're asking the right question. Getting it made, marketing it, getting it out there. And the billion-dollar apps are few and far between. Most apps, 99% of apps, make no money ever. So the first thing to ask yourself is, why am I doing this? Am I doing this to get rich? I got a really good idea. I'm sure you have a really good idea. Don't tell me, Stephanie. I don't want to give it away on the air. I'm sure it's a really good idea. But remember, there's a lot, you know, having an idea. Ideas are literally a dime a dozen. Everybody has great ideas. It's execution that makes a difference. Now, I've warned you, so let me tell you, let me answer your question. There are places to go to get programmers. There's lots of them. There are sites like Elance, E-L-A-N-C-E. It's like freelance minus the F-R-E, so Elance. And a lot of freelancers, including programmers, are there. You can go there and say, I need somebody to do this. You can even describe it and look at their qualifications. I would get references. It's the other problem here, and I've experienced this, is the minefield. There are a lot of people who say they can write an app right now. There's a lot of, you put a lot of trust in them because you're going to give them the idea. You're going to, you know, just remember what happened to Mark Zuckerberg. I don't know if it really happened. It was a movie, right? The Social Network, but... Actually, it didn't happen to him, did it? It happened to the Winklevoss twins, his two Harvard classmates who had this great idea for a social network. You know, college kids could meet each other, hook up, and you know, and they went and they found this freshman, Mark Zuckerberg, is a brilliant programmer. Mark's so good. And Mark stalled him and stalled him and stalled him and finally wrote an app, but he wrote it for himself called Facebook. And the Winklevoss twins, sorry guys, they sued. They got a lot of money. We don't know how much because the judgment is sealed, but let's put it this way. They're big investors now. They got some money out of that, probably because Mark didn't want to fight it any longer. But that's the point, is there's a certain amount of trust. You want to find somebody, A, you can trust, who's a good programmer. And there's another problem. And by the way, did I mention how much it costs to get an app written? A lot. You may find somebody who's willing to do it because he says, oh, this is such a good idea. Let me just have some stock because I think you're going to make it. That's very unlikely. Most likely you'll get somebody who will charge you an hourly rate. It could cost you. Well, let me put it this way. We decided we wanted an app for my podcast network, and we wanted an Android app and an iOS app. We've got lots of them. Thank you to our listeners who just are programmers and write them. But we thought it'd be good for us to have an official app. So we went out and we did some research. We found a company, good reputation, good references. Won't say their name. And we paid them a lot of money. I think we're up to $75,000, $85,000 now. Still don't have an app. We'll never have an app. At this point, I've lost $85,000. Do you want to do that? Are you ready to do that? And that, by the way, that was our mistake. That was the cheap guy. The other people we talked to were much more like $150,000 to $250,000. We probably'd have an app in that case. So I think my son and a lot of people say, I got a great, but it's a great idea. Great idea, nothing. Now the journey begins. You got to find a programmer you trust, who's not going to rip you off, who's got the capabilities you want, who can deliver a program. And by the way, you're not done when you get the program. You got to continue to update it, fix bugs. Then you have to market it, get it past Apple or Android, get into their stores. You know how many apps there are? There's tens of millions of apps. Your app is going to sink in a sea of apps. You've got to get it out there. You've got to figure out some way to get Apple to promote it. That's the best way. Or, I don't know, buy ads on the Super Bowl. That's only a million a minute. That you could do that. Elance is one. Angie's List. There's not Angie's List, but there's similar sites like that. There's a lot of them. But that's the least. Finding a programmer is the least of it. Your best bet, if you're lucky, if you're a college kid, find another college kid who you like, you get along with, you can trust, and he's a good programmer or she's a good programmer. And you say, let's do this together. Make him or her a partner. It's fraught with peril. So while Stephanie, I think it's great that you have an idea for an app, so do I, so does him and her, and so does she and he, and everybody has an idea for an app. that's the simplest part of it all. Damien, Spokane, Wisconsin, or I'm sorry, Washington, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Damien.
Yeah, hello, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
And I've been watching and listening for quite a number of years, even before Twit Brick House. Congratulations on your new move.
Thank you.
Yeah. And also, I wanted to thank the one of your sponsors, Carbonite, saved me from that crypto virus. So
there you go. There you go. That's what I'm saying. A good backup is, you know, it's actually one of the first thing, the best things you can do to protect yourself against malware, right?
Oh, yeah, and they want their $300, and I told them they can just go kiss off.
That's the malware guys, yeah. They say, we've encrypted your data, but for a small fee, we will unencrypt it for you. By the way, you may or may not even get an unencryption key. Sometimes you send them money, you get nothing.
Nope, and I didn't have to worry about that. Thank you, Carbonite. Thank you very much.
Nice.
And thanks to you for introducing me to Carbonite.
Good.
Okay, so my question is, I have been trying to get this program called AllCast to work, and it's not working for me. I don't want to buy Chromecast. So my brother and I, we found AllCast. It's working on his computer, but not working on mine.
Yeah, AllCast was written by a brilliant programmer. We call him Kosh. And the idea was, so Google built this thing called a Chromecast, which is a wonderful $35 device. You plug it into the HDMI port of your television. It gets Wi-Fi. Mm-hmm. Your Android device or iPhone or even your computer can cast to it if the app supports it. And a lot of apps do. They'll have a little Chromecast button. I launch YouTube, for instance. I'm watching a YouTube video on my phone. I want to see it on the big screen TV. I press the cast button. It says, all right, I see three Chromecasts in your house. Which one do you want to go to? I say living room. The living room TV pops on. It all works. The problem is that's got to be an app that supported it. AllCast was designed to support everything. Oh, got to take a break. I'll tell you more when we come back. It's the Clockwork mod, folks, not Kosh. So it's, you know, I love it, but it's kind of a hack, right?
Yeah.
Because, you know, well, for instance, you know, we've looked at putting Chromecast features into our app. That $85,000 app no one will ever see. And
I've heard about that, yeah.
It's expensive. Because there's some significant amount of coding. So not everybody has Chromecast capability in their app. So the idea was I can cast anything. But you notice right away, it's, by the way, the Clockwork mod, these guys are great. I mean, they really know Android. But it does, you know, and it's not compatible with all devices. So it just depends on the device. Although it looks like it's compatible with all my phones.
Yeah, it's compatible with all my gear also, at least on the smartphone side. I got many phones in front of me like you do, so but not all of them have service. They're just my Wi-Fi geeks.
Yeah, so what happens? Do you see your Chromecasts?
When I go into AllCast on the phone and I have AllCast running on the computer, I do not see it.
Okay. So you need to be on the same Wi-Fi network.
It is. I already checked that, and I only have one Wi-Fi network in the house. That's it. Through Comcast.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
So,
I don't think it's a port issue because, I mean, the first thing is you should be able to see it if it's on the Wi-Fi network. And when you go into the – have you used the Chromecast app on your Android phone to see if the Chromecast is properly set up?
It's not Chromecast, it's AllCast that I'm trying to work.
No, I understand, but you got to get the Chromecast working. You have a Chromecast hardware, right? What hardware are you casting to?
I'm casting to AllCast receiver.
Ah.
Yeah.
Ah, yeah, I've never tried that. So your friend is able to get that working?
My brother. My brother has the same thing.
So you're, instead of using a Chromecast device, you're using the AllCast receiver on a PC, and you're trying to cast to a PC.
Yes.
Got it.
My brother's works. I can see his pop up when he starts up the AllCast receiver on his computer, but when I start up the AllCast receiver on my computer, I don't see my.
Interesting. So you don't see you don't see the AllCast device at all. I've never used it. I've used the AllCast app, the sender. I've never tried it with a receiver. I don't know what the issues might be.
Well, I'm starting it up right now.
I don't think you'd have a port forwarding issue because it's not.
My brother said that he might have had to open up a port on the computer.
Yeah, I wonder.
Yeah, I'm trying it right now. I'm hitting all caps
so,
right now.
I'm trying to think of how it would signal.
Well, my brother's room is coming up on his Chromecast. Then my Roku is coming up, but then I'm not seeing Chrome and then my IP address, which it would pop up if my brother was to start up his.
Apparently, it does use port 53515.
I don't know how to open that up in the computer because I haven't never had to worry.
No,
about
you
that.
Open it up in the router.
No. I don't. Oh, in the router.
In the router.
And that means, well, like I said, my brother's is working, so that means I would have to take his out to put mine in.
Oh, you're on the same network.
Yes. It's all one house network.
Well, if he opened, oh, it is Kosh. We're talking to Damien. He's in Spokane, Washington. So I got a little more detail from Damien. So he and his brother are on the same network in the same place. Both of them have PCs. Both of them have devices. On the device, the Android device, they're using a program called Allcast. And then on the PC, they're putting something called Allcast Receiver. This is from a guy named Kosh, K-O-U-S-H, brilliant programmer, creator of Clockwork Mod. And the idea is that you've basically turned your PC into a Chromecast device. You know, the normal way to do this, the approved way to do this, of course, is to buy a $35 Chromecast, you plug it into your TV, or you could plug it in your monitor if your monitor had two HDMI ports, and then switch your monitor over to the HDMI port for the Chromecast, and then use apps that are Chromecast-enabled to tell the Chromecast, okay, I'm handing Netflix off to you. The Chromecast then uses your Wi-Fi network to get Netflix and play it into the TV. But you're doing it in an unapproved, interesting way, which should work. Your brother's system, exactly the same, is working. And that is using a program called Allcast Receiver from the same Kosh.
I'm using Allcast Receiver also on my computer.
Do you have a firewall on your computer?
My firewall is down. I just to test this out, and I just figured, well, I better shut down the firewall, see what's going on.
I did check, and it's in the notes for the Allcast receiver that there is a firewall port that it uses, UCP TCP port 53515. If that port were blocked, and it's not normally open, so if you had any firewall running on your system at all, it might block that port, and that could be one difference between your computer and his computer. You have security software on your computer, though.
My security software, I shut it off.
That could conceivably block it. You know, I don't know. Maybe somebody listening has a solution for you. If they do, you can call 8888-ASK-LEO, put it in our chat room, irc.twit.tv, or comment on the website, techguylabs.com. I would read the notes in the app. The thing is, it's an unusual thing to do. It's not an approved use of Chromecast. So, as with many of these things, it's tricksy. The fact that your brother got it working is a good sign. That means it's working. make sure your brother and you have different names for your receiver. I wonder what your brother is doing differently than what you're doing. I just don't know. Larry, Birmingham, Alabama. Hi, Larry. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo.
Welcome.
Thank you. I have a project I'm thinking about doing, and I wanted to first of all get your opinion whether it's worth it or not to do.
Okay.
And then I have a couple of little concerns if I do it. I have a late model 2009 27-inch iMac, and I'm thinking about getting rid of the optical drive and putting an SSD drive in there and creating a Fusion drive in hopes to make my computer go faster and maybe last a little longer.
I don't know if you can. It's a little tricky to do your own Fusion drive. For a while you couldn't, but I do think now you can. A Fusion drive is Apple's branded technology built into OS X that allows you to marry together a spinning hard drive with a small solid-state flash drive. Getting the best of both worlds, kind of. The flash drive is fast, especially for reads. Has zero seek time, but it's small, and that's true of all flash drives. They tend to be more expensive per gigabyte, so people don't get as big drives. But that you you make that work because you get a big spinning drive, you know, a multi-terabyte. In my case, the Fusion drive I have is a 3 terabyte, I think, a spinning drive. And then Apple's software magically, or as we say in the computer biz, auto-magically moves stuff you access a lot to the SSD, and you get some speed improvement. It's nowhere near as fast as just using an SSD. So that's just understand the limits of Fusion. And also creating your own Fusion drive, I seem to remember, I haven't looked at it lately, but it was for a while you couldn't, and I think there are a way to do it, but it's tricky. Now, even more tricky, depending on your facility with a screwdriver, is opening up an iMac.
Right. I think I'm seeing tutorials online and so forth. I'm pretty handy with it, but I think I wouldn't have an issue with
you know what you need?
Opening up the iMac.
A really big suction cup.
You're right. Right. Front off.
So I've done this. I didn't do it. I watched my engineer Colleen do it. There was no way I was going to do this. She said, no, I'll do it. And by the way, the best place for this to find the hardware you need and instructions on how to do it, including tools, and I recommend them all the time. They're not a sponsor, but I love them, MacSales.com. It's Otherworld Computing. They do Apple hardware. And they have videos on it, and that's how we figured out. Although there are YouTube videos, I trust Otherworld Computing. I think if they've got a video, it's going to be the right way to do it. But you need spudgers and you need suction cups, and Apple does not want you to do what you're doing.
Right, I know.
Yeah. But you can do it, and she did it, and it worked. If it were me, I'd say don't try to do a Fusion drive. Just have a large as you can afford SSD. Make that your OS X drive and your application drive, and then put your data on the spinning drive. Data is not as critical. The best benefit to an SSD is boot times, so how fast your operating system loads, and application load time. Data files tend to be small, so it's not as big a deal. You can also put the swap disk on the SSD if you're using Photoshop. That's another thing you can do to speed up Photoshop.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's up to you, but start with Otherworld Computing. It's at MacSales.com. They have the hardware you need, including tools. All their drives come with tools, including that big suction cup. You need that for the glass on the front of the iMac. There's no easy way to pull it out. You actually use like a window washer's suction cup. You seal it on and you go, you pull the screen out. It was the scariest part of that process. It was a little touch and go there for a moment, but Colleen got it working. She's amazing. iFixit.com. Somebody's reminding me in the chat room. They're also great. They probably have videos too. They call themselves, you know, the kind of the world's repair manual. It's their goal to have manuals to repair everything from McDonald's Happy Meals toys to 27-inch iMacs.
Can I ask you a quick question?
Sure.
So if I decide to do either way, a Fusion drive or just a SSD drive alone, I do back up my computer using Time Machine. But this is a multi-user computer, so I've got different user accounts on it. And I've never had to restore, luckily, never had to restore from Time Machine. When I restore back from Time Machine, will it install it just like it is now?
Supposedly. I'm not a fan of Time Machine. When you look behind under the covers of what Apple's doing with Time Machine, it is kludgy. So I think it's fine to use it, and I use it at home, but I use it more, not the idea of replacing I lost the hard drive, I can replace everything, but in case I throw out a file or I want to go back in time because it does versioning. I would supplement Time Machine with a better backup program. My favorite, Super Duper, is really excellent. Works hand-in-hand with Time Machine, so you can use both. And it will make bootable external backups, which is really good to have, and keep it up to date. So, in effect, your external drive mirrors your internal drive. If something should happen to your internal drive, and on an iMac, that's potentially catastrophic. You have to bring the whole thing in.
Right.
With Super Duper, you can have an external drive that is bootable and exactly the same. It's kept up to date at all times by Super Duper. So all you do is just reboot the machine, hold down the Option key, and boot to the external drive, and it's as if nothing happened. And that gives you – that's a really nice – solution, so you don't have to wait to get back online.
Oh,
so
okay.
Super Duper is free, although it's worth paying for the full version. Not very expensive, 20. It's just a sawbuck or two. It's really a good program. Super Duper. You can just Google that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, I think Cool Breeze, that's a better solution than a Fusion drive. I'm trying to remember if I'm still using a Fusion drive on here. This is not a 5K. This is the late 2012. This is, I think, the same one he was talking about. It's a 4-year-old 27-inch. Yeah, it's a Fusion drive. So it's a 3.12 terabyte Fusion drive. So this looks, and by the way, this is the super duper backup, that external 3 terabyte. So that is just, and for me, this is, I don't even use Time Machine on this one because it's not the data on here. I just need to get it running again, right? So I can use it for the shows. So this is a Fusion drive. And you don't even see, you know, that it's two different drives, which it is. It's one large 3 terabyte spinning drive and something like a 64 gig SSD. You also don't see the, frankly, the speed. But this is fine. I mean, you know, I have a much more modern 5K iMac running Thunderbolt SSD drives. This is just as fast. You can't tell the difference. I guess if I were doing something that was really I/O bound. Yeah, I don't think I would not use Time Machine as your backup. I really wouldn't. Hey, our show today, I mean, I use it, but I wouldn't use it for like, oh, emergency backup. That's like if you threw out a file and you want to go back in time. It's useful for that. Leo Laporte, that's music from my era. That's my people, old people. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, ask Leo. Dan is on the line from St. Petersburg, Florida. Don't forget, we're going to keep answering calls after the show ends, so don't hang up. If you're on the line, I'll get to every one of you. Hi, Dan.
Hi, Leo. Updated my Chrome browser yesterday and went to my website and noticed that the formatting is completely off. And I don't know if it's related, but I went to another browser, tried it with Edge, and my site looks normal.
So how frustrating is that, huh?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if, I mean, that's interesting. I mean, see what version of Chrome we're at right now. I don't know if they, we're at version 53 of Chrome. I don't know if they changed, what looks different?
The formatting, like I have a menu bar that's supposed to be horizontal, and now the menu bar is vertical.
Oh, that's not good.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there are standards, web standards. But unfortunately, there's a web standard for every need and every browser and every user and every site. Standards are substandard. Now, who designed your site?
Me. I did it through Google Domains. I used Blogspot as the template.
Okay, so you used Google's – isn't that ironic? You used Google's templates and Google's browsers are broken. All right, so use Google's templates, and you didn't do any custom CSS or HTML. You just did your content within their templates. Well, that sounds like a problem at Blogspot. I mean, that's...
But I have another Blogspot that looks normal. It's basically the same template. That's
you know, you might try regenerating the site. It may be that something, you know, one thing went astray or something. Chrome, as far as I know, going from 52 to 53 didn't make any massive changes in how it renders pages. But understand, that's what's going on here. If you look at your page, not in a browser, but just like as text, it's a bunch of gobbledygook. It's what we call markup. In fact, that's what HTML stands for, is hypertext. You know, that's where you click a link and you go there. That's hypertext. Markup language. It's a subset of a larger markup language called XML. And markup language is human readable, but really designed for machines. And if you look at it, you'll see all sorts of things like, you know, angle brackets and commands for font size and all sorts of stuff. There's also your content is in there as well. Nowadays, the way most sites, including Blogger, work is your content is stored separately in a database and merged at the last moment with the page description to put a page up on the screen. So what happens is Blogger, when you go to Blogger, go to your website, Blogger sends out a stream of text characters that's a mishmash of formatting instructions and your actual content. The browser gets those, and it's up to the browser to make sense of it. And it looks at it and says, uh-huh, okay, you want a 15-point font here, you want a menu bar there, and it renders. That's called rendering it. It draws it on the screen based on the description. And in fact, if you went into the code, and you could do this, they do let you edit your CSS. That's the cascading style sheets. If you ever worked at a word processor like Microsoft Word, you know that style sheets are kind of analogous. A style sheet describes how a page is laid out in the word processor, where page breaks are, how long, how much distance between paragraphs, how what font you're using. That's the style sheet. CSS is designed for the web. It's cascading because you can nest them. And that's really how most web pages these days are described, is not in HTML, but in CSS. There's a little bit of HTML in there, too. There are changes, you know, from time to time. The standard is constantly evolving. It is, you know, in theory, led by the World Wide Web Consortium, or W3C. They define HTML standards. I can't remember what. We're HTML 5 point something right now. They define what those standards are. They define how a browser is supposed to render it. But there's a lot of slop in between. And so, as you probably noticed, getting a website to look the same on Internet Explorer, Safari, Chrome, and Firefox, the four major browsers, we'll throw Opera in there too, is a challenge. Like many websites have specific code in the website that says things like, if it's Internet Explorer 8, do this. If it's Internet Explorer 9, do this. If it's Safari, do this. It's a nightmare. Web designers just suffer mightily because the standard isn't so standard. I don't think anything happened majorly between 52 and 53. I really don't. Much more likely, something went wrong on the Google side, on the Blogspot side. So I would here's what you can do, because Google does the right thing, which is separate your content from the style, the template. So your content is protected. It's safe. But you change the template. Just change the template briefly. Change the template, render it, make sure it looks okay on the new Chrome. Oh, that's good. Then go back to your original and see if that fixes it. Could just be this a bit flipped. It's kind of amazing this mess works at all, frankly. And it is, you just got to feel for the poor web designer. This is why, by the way, I generally say you don't want to do your own site. You want to use, at the very least, do what you're doing, Dan, which is use templates provided by somebody who knows what they're doing. And they have highly paid engineers and designers spend a lot of energy making those templates work. I don't know what happened. What a mess. Switch to a different template and then go back and see if that fixes it. Last call for the show, but you know what? When we're going to keep calling, keep taking calls for another hour after the show ends, so don't hang up. Daryl in Santa Rosa, up the road a piece. Hi, Daryl.
Hello, Daryl.
Oh, I think Daryl's gone. I don't hear a sound. Not a peep. Well, let me put Daryl on hold and we'll check in on him, make sure he's awake. Larry, Los Angeles, how you doing? Uh-oh, is it me? Larry, are you there?
Oh, Larry. Okay.
You know what happens? We keep people on hold for 3 hours, and they fall asleep. Hi, Larry. Sorry to keep you on hold so long.
Oh, it's okay. Well,
Rub your eyes. Gather your thoughts. What can I do for you?
Well, I bought this little, like a terabyte card. And off this cheap website or whatever, and I moved some files over, and then later on, probably a week later, you know, I saved some like music videos off of YouTube or whatever.
Yeah.
And I try to go back and play it. It said, I see it's there, but then there's saying I can't play it because it can't play the file because it's been. You know, the codec might have been changed or...
Sounds like the card maybe not as... You said you got it on a cheap site. Really, how... No, is it a USB thumb drive? What kind of
device? Yeah, that's what it is.
Okay. And how big was it? You said it's a terabyte?
Yeah.
No, it's not. You sure terabyte, not gigabyte?
No, it says terabyte.
Yeah, that's definitely a junk card because there is no such thing. So you got robbed. That's just... Bad card. Sorry. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great Geek Week. They don't make terabyte flash drives.
Sure, I think somebody came out with one.
Really?
For like,
it wouldn't be cheap.
$10,000.
Let me see how much a terabyte flash drive would be. Oh, look, Kingston makes one. Look at that. One terabyte USB 3 flash drive. It's called the Predator. $670. So if you didn't spend, and what that's the list price is $1,200. If you didn't spend $600 for your terabyte hard drive, they were lying to you, and you got ripped off, basically. So they do make them, but they ain't cheap. Can't get a cheap terabyte flash drive, thumb drive. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on. And on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today. And of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guy show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.